Hey, it's a brand new week here on Shift and Stare. It looks like everybody's happy. Everybody's laughing. Matt's
We're
got
laughing.
Color in his eyes, like he was just embarrassed or something. But
it's a
hey,
new
everybody.
Day. Well, I saw something maybe I shouldn't have.
So, let's not even go there. Zoom's been going on for a long time. But hey, everybody, on today's show, we're going to talk about the disaster in Austria. We are going to talk about some two-wheeled motorcycles, and I think gonna bring up Mustangs, and we're going to talk about what else,
they're,
guys?
They're Matt Stangs. They're officially called Matt Stangs.
We can talk about the Matt Cave. I'll tell you what we should do first is talk about Geico.
Yes, I think we should.
Oh yeah, sure.
You know, maybe you guys, if you own your home, raise your hand. If you rent your home, raise your hand. Well, either way, it could be a lot of hard work, but you know what's easy is bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home already, or your shop, or whatever. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Yeah, we talk hoops on Robert Horry's new podcast, The Big Shot Bob Pod.
I would have loved to play with LeBron because if you get down, get open, get to where you're supposed to be, he's going to find you. Feel like he got robbed for MVP.
But with Robert Horry, we cover the floor and we talk about everything. And so your youngest is a teenager.
So he's not going to high school right now. He's doing everything via Zoom and his dad, can you help me? Nope, I'm running away. Run.
From the team that brought you the big podcast with Shaq, it's The Big Shot Bob Pod. Coming your way soon on the Podcast One app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, livebylive.com, and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.
And places with your host Brad Banjoy, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Yes, Brad, interrupting my ad read. What is it, Brad?
You know, I said you can insure the Matt kid.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm officially a Geico customer.
There you go.
Cool.
Yeah. I actually got a motorcycle policy recently. So it's Geico.
I want to know something. Is bundling, is that like what Bernie Sanders did when he's appearing in all that? He's kind of bundled. He's sitting there. And so I wonder if
Bernie's gone viral.
Yeah, he bundled his weather and health insurance all into one picture.
Exactly. And his middies. That thing is everywhere, man. I mean, it's on every car. I mean, it's been, you know, posted, you know, it was just, it's hilarious. It fits in so many places. So
talk about Bernie sitting in his chair, Bernie in the chair. If you haven't seen it, good for you.
Bernie in the chair.
If you haven't seen it, you're not on any social media or even watch the news or do anything because it's everywhere. Hey, I'm sitting in my chair today. Got a new background guy.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, it looks like you're in a bathroom stall with all the tile work.
No, I'm at Daly's Machine in Omaha, Nebraska today.
Oh, okay. So his office looks like a bathroom?
This is a true machine shop, brother. This is where you walk in and you drop off your parts. Let's see.
There's a billet toilet, I see.
Is his Mike Daly's dad. Had a lot of really cool race cars. That 55 is one of them. He also had a badass Opel GT, like a 70s Opel GT.
Oh, wow.
That had a Hemi.
Yeah, the other cool looked like a little Corvette Stingray.
And it was an all steel body that was a flopper body, like a funny car. And that thing was so cool. And this machine shop, they did all my engine work, all my heads back in the day. You know, everything I needed done, they always got it done there and a place called Charlie's Speed and Machine, But the thing about Daly's is you'd walk up to that counter there, and you can't read the sign above, but it says we only accept cash and checks. And then checks is crossed out. We no longer take checks. And and it was like that as long as I could remember. But you'd look around the corner, and all these guys are working in there. They're porting heads. They're, you know, CCing and, you know, doing everything. And over in the corner was a 67 split window Corvette that was up on jack stands with the knockoff wheels taken off of it. And I'm telling you, from the first time I ever went in there, that car sat there, and it was like everybody that came in, I guess, would be like, hey, is that car for sale? Is that car for sale?
Of course.
And he would never sell it. And then finally, about, I'm going to say 10 years ago, a high school buddy of mine finally bought it from him. And the car had no miles on it. It was awesome. Wow. It was, you know, just some of the cool things.
You said 67, but wasn't the split window 63?
You're right. That was my error. I'm not a Corvette aficionado.
No, I get it.
Coming from a Ford guy, what the heck, Matt?
Well, that's a pretty distinctive 1 year only, and I just screwed up.
You know, actually, it's not really Ford or Corvette. You know what it is? It's Pete Brock, our friend Pete Brock, who designed he did the BRE racing team of the Datsun 510s, worked with Shelby, did the Shelby Daytona Coupe.
Yeah.
When he was a young designer at GM, he designed the 63 split window coupe with that team.
Oh, wow.
Their design team, yeah.
That's so cool.
It's one of Pete's accolades that people seem to forget all the time because he was so into the BRE stuff and the Shelby stuff.
Right.
But
he
was a young designer on that team with GM as well.
You know, one of the interesting
that's really cool.
The split window Corvette was that when it came out, people didn't like the split window. And there were actually people that the following year when they removed it and came out with the one-piece glass, people would take their cars to the body shop, have them saw cut that out, put the new piece of glass in to make it look like the newer version, and because they had a better line of sight. And that's one of the things that made the split windows even rarer was that the people that did that kind of malarkey.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up now because we've been down this road a few times on the show, how oftentimes a vehicle failure or a design failure is what ends up making it the rare thing.
Right.
And, you know, and become desirable because it didn't do well, but it's interesting. Like some cars didn't do well and aren't worth shit. And some didn't do well and are worth all the money these days, right? Like it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you don't see K cars going across the block at any of the big auctions going, we have a K car coming up now. This was Lee Iacocca's brainchild. And, you know, no. You
know. Yeah.
Like that little 4x4 Dodge I sent you guys. That little two-door pickup car.
Yeah.
It's still sitting there for sale. So if you kind
of, that's weird.
If you get an itch,
I can't believe that didn't get scooped out.
I think it's the wheels that turn it off.
Oh yeah.
So Aaron, you and I were talking, there was a big fire over in Europe. Why don't you fill everybody in?
Yeah. So the Top Mountain Motorcycle Museum burned to the ground. I don't think they figured out what happened yet. The whole place was wood. If you haven't seen this place, look it up on their website. It was built in 2016, housed about 230 rare motorcycles and cars. They had a little Porsche Speedster in there, and they had some really cool stuff. But it was a beautiful museum. And like 4:30 in the morning or something, it caught on fire, and within, I think, a couple hours, it would burn to the ground. They couldn't save it. Now, we're talking, this place is like 6,500 feet up. You know, it's way up at the top of this mountain, and it was the highest, I think, the elevation museum in the world. But it sits near the border of Italy and Austria, and the windy road that goes to this place is epic. I mean, it's like, it's in every photo of like, oh, dude, that's the pilgrimage. We got to ride that road. So it was a neat idea to ride this, you know, your motorcycle or something up this road and go to the museum. But it's a real tragedy. I mean, there was some really, really that they had a flying Merkel in there. You know, they had vintage MV Agustas. They had, you know, Harleys and Indians and JAP bikes. And I mean, just everything you could think of that you go, oh man, look at that. Vince of Black Shadow. I mean, everything. And it's
they also
got
a lot of prototypes and a lot of aerodynamic
bikes. One-offs. Yeah.
When
you
see the photos of the fire, I mean, that place was fully engulfed. I mean, it looked like something out of a movie, man. It was.
It was a big ripper. Being at the top of a mountain, I would assume you could see it from several countries. A really, really sad story, though. I don't think anything was saved. I think everything was a total loss. And it was a collection. I'm going to mess up their name, so I'm not even going to try. But it's two twin brothers who started it, and they own a bunch of ski resorts up there, and I think they own part of the mountain itself. But it's really cool guys, big enthusiasts. They've been collecting these things, you know, most of their lives, I would presume, because it was a big collection. And then of course there was a bunch of guests stuff in there too that wasn't theirs in the collection on show.
Right,
so
there was also some rare Porsches and Audis.
Yeah, there was a 356 in there, and they had some cool stuff. If you go to their website, it shows a bunch of stuff. Of course, they're all over YouTube because it's a big motorcycle and enthusiast pilgrimage place. So, yeah, very, very sad. Very, very sad.
These are the worst stories because
there weren't any Fox bodies in there, Matt. So don't.
Yeah. Well, these are the worst stories because the cars and the bikes aren't replaceable. I mean,
no.
Yeah. Insurance can write a check and you can feel a little bit better about that, but you just can't do it. And it keeps bringing me back to Brad,
priceless.
Brad, one of your, you know, over the years at Bondspeed, one of your customers owned some Bondspeed vehicles. And one of the vehicles that I really, really wish I would that I kind of wanted, like was on my wish list of Bondspeed vehicles was the truck with the, you know, the short cab. I think it had like a Cobra engine in or a mod motor, and it had like maybe an IRS in it.
Was when the new body style came out of the new Ford trucks, they asked me to build something. And so I said, well, the new GT just came out. What about giving me a GT motor? And they said, oh, well, it doesn't work because one, the chassis talks to the body. The other, the body talks to the chassis. I said, just give it to me. We'll make it work. And they sent me a Roush prepped GT motor and a 6-speed transmission, not a transaxle, a 6-speed transmission. So we had to figure out everything. Those trucks never came manual. So we had to, you know, figure out all of the clutch pedals, figure out everything. And we did all that, put it in, and it had IRS out of a Lincoln Navigator. We back half the whole chassis. And my friends over at DSE, Kyle at DSE, did all the chassis work. And then we, put all new suspension up front with Koni shocks, coilovers on all four corners. The thing had tons and tons of body work. It had a $30,000 stereo system. Had 8 hides of leather in a 2-door cab. Everything about that was hand fabbed, one-off wheels, and it was fast. It handled great. And you're right, Matt. The guy who bought it from me, he built a brand new high security building for his collection of cars. He had Yanko Camaros. He had Shelby Mustangs. He had my 66 Chevelle that I had done on a Morrison chassis, and it was all in bare metal, and I hadn't gotten it done, so he bought that was there. And he came to his house in Palm Springs. This was up in Canada, and he said, I felt so good because for the first time my new building was done, high security. And he said that he got the call from the fire department that his building had caught on fire. They couldn't get in because the fence around it had stiletto wire and the steel gate. By the time they cut through everything and got in and then busted down the door to get in, it was fully engulfed. And they found out it was a battery, you know, box, you know, I'm not going to say a brand name, one of the battery, you know, things that keep them charged up. And it had shorted out and caught. And the photos he sent me were just, because he had it like all the cars on lifts, and he had about 50 cars, and it was like a U. Well, what happened is the fire got worse, the lifts collapsed, so every car underneath, all the cars got burnt, but the ones underneath got smashed because the other cars fell on top of them.
Yeah.
And the truck that you're talking about, he had in the like recreational area where he'd hang out with his friends, he had a huge window that looked out at the cars, and the Bondspeed F-150 was right outside the window. And so, because he liked it so much, he said, I could look out.
Yeah.
C-10 he had collapsed on top of it. And there was not one salvageable part. I even asked him, can you send me something for posterity? And he goes, there's nothing. He goes, the aluminum all melted. He goes, there's not even a wheel I can.
Wow. That's a hot fire too, to puddle all the metal.
I mean,
and
just, you're right. So many elements of that loss of the engine and all the custom work, but like super rare engine. I mean, that was a disaster, but I always loved that thing. I saw it at SEMA. I remember you guys building it. It was such a badass vehicle. And it was kind of the ones at the top of my list of like, you know, it'd be fun to get a Bondspeed vehicle. And that was the jam right there. I mean, short bed, like regular cab, manual transmission, like it had all the good. What year do you think that was that you did that? What year was that body style truck?
I believe. And
yeah.
And you talk about,
you were a baby back then.
I know. No, but guys like little John Patera, you know, who's really famous in the hot rod circles and was a friend of mine, you know, the surround around the shifter and all of the stuff on the dash. And it had a handmade carbon fiber wing on the back, and what held it in place, all of that was machined out of billet aluminum, and it was all done by Little John for me. So I mean, there were people involved in the project that made it even more valuable too, you know. And it was just everything about it. We even took the dash apart and remachined the instrument cluster out of brass so that it went with the whole feel of the truck. And the mirrors, I remember Ford telling me, it's a pre-production truck. We don't have anything else to give you. There's not a parts bin to go to. And so I wanted, you know, the mirrors on those trucks are ginormous. They're just huge.
Yeah.
So I remember getting out there with my cutoff saw and taking the mirror apart and cutting it. And I cut 2 inches out of it, bonded it back together. And then I went down to the glass shop in Tustin and had the guys cut me new mirrors for it. But I remember when I was doing it, I was so nervous, you guys, because it's like, if I fuck this up, I can't go buy another one. There's not a salvage yard. There's not a, so it was like one time or no time. And I got the first one done. I looked at it. I went, it's bitching. Crap. Now I got to get the other one done. You know, those are the kind of things.
What was that color that was on it?
It was a special mix that DuPont did for me. It was an eggplant purple, but soup almost leaning towards the black. The only thing I didn't like about that was I wanted it to flip gold, and it muddied up. They put a little too much bronze in it, and it got a little muddy on the flip, but it was specifically to look black, except for in the, excuse me, the highlights where it would look eggplant purple.
Yeah.
Street rod colors.
Well, at the time, it was, you know, when we built that, it was a real, you know, we were trying to really come out with something that would just give you a highlight of color, but look a little sinister everywhere else. But everything on that, I mean,
that's cool.
And built exhaust.
Yeah, it was a cool vehicle.
Forgot about it.
Very cool vehicle.
Speaking of which, did you guys see that photo I sent you over the weekend?
I was just going to say, you speaking of Bondspeed cars, that little T-Bird was badass, man.
Yeah.
Thunderbird that I did and then licensed to Celine to be the Celine Thunderbird and, you know, get a whole brochure, a sales brochure and everything. And then Ford nixed the whole Thunderbird program. But that car, I sold it at Barrett Jackson the same time I sold the truck, and it literally went to a warehouse and has not seen light of day, except for when it was down there. A friend of mine goes, hey, your car's down here at Palm Springs Cars and Coffee, and it's not the same guy. It's a different guy. And I was like, it is? And he goes, yeah, he wants to sell it. And I was like, really? You know? And then I started talking to him. I go, you know what he wants for it or anything? And he goes, well, he said he put a bunch of money into it. I go, what did he do to it? And he goes, well, he changed the exhaust and he did this and he changed the, I'm like, whoa. I'm not even interested anymore, you know, because it's like,
oh no,
it's like you don't take a one-off Ford Saleen prototype. I mean, even the plate on it says Ford prototype and change it. It was, like the exhaust. I worked with Borla and we did a polished stainless exhaust, and that has a full rear belly pan that we made, a rear diffuser belly pan that goes all the way to the axle. I was so pissed when I heard they said that they changed the exhaust, because what they did is they just exited it NASCAR style right in front of the rear tires. And I was like, do you know how many hours I spent bending those tubes and getting them? Because you have to reach up under the, you know,
it's got to go, because
it's not
a
removable belly pan. You've got to kind of reach up. You got to remove the whole fascia to do it. And fit everything. Fit everything, took it apart and got it all to come exactly out where we wanted it. And it had a tiny little rattle. One of those things when you build a car, oh, I'll fix that next week. Oh, I'll fix that next week. And that's why he changed it, because of the tiny rattle. I was going to put some of that fireproof blanket between the belly pan and the thing and just, you know, that would have taken care of it. Easy fix. But somebody went, charge this guy a bunch of money to redo the exhaust the wrong way, you know?
It's interesting because the picture you sent, I zoomed in on it, and it looks like that they, you know, you said it comes out before the rear tire. And they fabbed up like a rocker panel with an outlet. It looks like a Viper.
Yeah. And they would have had to cut into the one-off rockers, because all those rockers we handmade.
Yeah.
And so it actually got me thinking about, I've got another set of body panels. Maybe I should make my not worry about buying that one back. Make another one.
I mean,
put a Coyote motor.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you could buy the Thunderbird basically for nothing, probably right now, right?
Nothing.
And I know we talked many times about doing it with a manual transmission, but the truth is a Coyote motor with the modern day 6-speed automatic is fantastic.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to, you could even do the paddle shifts for the 6-speed and just do it that way. That would be a pretty cool combination.
Oh yeah. And like I said, I've got a tail, and I have the molds, but I actually have a nose, an extra nose, an extra tail, and an extra set of rockers that we pulled. The only thing I don't have is for the one piece tonneau. I'd have to probably fab that out of metal, because the one we made, the mold got dropped and got broken.
You know, also just to kind of mix it up, it's not the worst idea. As fun as a Coyote motor would be, an EcoBoost 4-cylinder crate engine, the turbo crate engine, they're 300 horsepower.
Yeah.
And with a little tuning, those things are lightweight and they're 400 horsepower with a little tuning and mods like all day long. And that's a small lightweight motor, where you just think about the balance you would get in a vehicle like that. Do an EcoBoost turbo, move that thing as far back to the firewall as possible. You know, the transmission controller, everything's electronic, so you can pretty much put it wherever you want to put it, right? It's not really so much the linkage at that point. Could be.
Well, the way we were going
to kind of interesting.
The linkage, I think automatic's the way to go and everything. And like you said, and that car was fun to drive. You know, when I drove it, it was kick in the butt to drive. It was a nice little handling car.
You definitely made it look better. What's that? Said you definitely made it look better, because those things were ugly.
You know what?
What was the engine stock?
It was a V8. I don't remember what cylinder it was in it. It was one of those things we'd have to look up. But yeah, that was the thing. They just weren't that good looking, and we redid it. They were like, "What?" You know, I mean, they were like, "That's what we should have done." You know, but we just took a different approach, and it worked out really well. But
speaking of T-Birds, I believe Dad's T-Bird is out of paint.
Oh, it is.
Go. Yeah, yeah. So I'm waiting for Rich to send me some photos, but Dad's flying home today and he wants to see it Monday. So cool. They've been hustling. So I'm real excited. He's talking wheels, Brad, but he's talking wire wheels. He wants a classic, you know, like not a million spoke wire wheels. So that can't means you're out there. Unless you want to build some wire wheels.
Nope.
Like, wire wheels, Dad?
You know what you could do, though, is some wheels that look like hubcaps or have hubcaps. You know, then he could get the size he wants.
I wish he'd do like a murdered out, you know, dish style wheel. I think
we're doing
I think it would look so cool.
We have a customer right now as a 55 four door 210 sedan. Maybe it's not a 210, but a 55 four door, Bel Air. And it was the car that his parents brought him home from the hospital in, right?
Oh, wow. How cool.
And this guy went back to Texas, found it in a field. It was a piece of crap. Brought it back, had a Morrison chassis put under it, all kinds of stuff, an LS motor. But
did it right.
He wants it to look bone stock. The interior looks stock. Oh. It's got huge bare brakes, six piston brakes, front and rear. But he wants it to look bone stock. So we're doing some wheels for him right now that look just like a Steely. And we're going to actually paint them exactly like the car would have had. And then we're machining a groove into it so that the stock hubcaps, the little dog dish hubcaps will go.
Oh, wow. Cool. Because I always like those artillery wheels, you know, with the little scallops. Because I told Dad, they're kind of spokey, you know, there's a little design element to that, you know, but he wants the classic wires. So
yeah, no, I know what he wants. Like that thing has that look, and it's that's what all the old guys want. I didn't tell him that. So Dad, that's what all the old guys want are those wire wheels.
Yeah.
Well, at least he doesn't want white walls.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But it's cool. Yeah. It's like a real deep metallic gray, dark. It's real dark with oxblood interior, and it's badass, man. It's gonna look so good. And I don't know if for you folks listening, this is Ronnie Montrose's old T-Bird. So it's I think it's a 63. I think that the round tail lights, but a gentleman gave us the car, and he's got all the documentation. It's Ronnie's old car, so it's real special. So dad dumped some money into it to have it renovated, and he's gonna hold on to it. So that's a pretty special thing.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So what's the update on the Mad Cave?
Yeah.
Did you like the logo that was created, Matt?
I love the new shift and steer splash. It's awesome.
Did you like the logo we created, Matt?
Oh, I didn't. That's the one you just posted. I didn't see it yet. Hold on a sec.
You have to look at it.
Yeah, I think awesome. You just. Yeah, I think you just. It. Posted it. let me look it up while you do it.
Matt Cave. You're looking now? You got it?
Yeah. yeah, I see. I see it. Actually, I like it. Wait, who's the dog?
That's a fox for the fox bodies that are in there.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, the same thing, Matt. I'm like, what's with the dog?
Yeah.
Quick thought, since it's always fox bodies that you're talking about, he's got to have a fox on there with you.
I don't know where Rick finds this stuff. It's like, what year is this picture from? My hair was big. Those glasses I lost in Italy years ago.
I ask him the same thing. Sometimes he puts the ones up of us like we're like all, you know.
Rick. Yeah, so moving along with the cave, working with a nice group, I think it's called Eric's Floor and Coating. They came in and to do, I wanted to just lay down just like a new epoxy coating on the floors and fill some of the cracks and things like that. And I, you know, the process, you guys have done this before. They got to come in there and they've got to grind that cement, right? It's just kind of like, if you're going to like, do a good
on the floor.
You know, if you're going to do like a ceramic coating or some sort of, you know, heat paint or something on headers, you know, you always kind of want to sandblast it first. Like you just want the rawest form of metal. And the cement really is all about the prep. And one of the things that I learned in this process was it's also about the humidity, the water. So we're right next to the wetlands and not far from the beach. So the amount of water, amount of humidity that's coming up through the cement, there's a meter that they use. And they said, hey, if you don't use a good epoxy or even a vapor layer like a primer first, it doesn't matter how good it is, that that moisture will come up through the cement and cause that
delaminate
epoxy to basically pop off. So they had to do a lot of work, a lot of prep. There's about, I don't know, 1,900, maybe 2,000 square feet of warehouse cement floor. And I knew they had to grind it. And this guy, this poor guy that showed up, one guy showed up with like, I don't know, like a 9 or 10 inch orbital sander attached to a vacuum on his hands and knees with knee pads, just doing the whole thing by hand. And he had to do two passes on the whole thing.
It took him nine hours. You posted the guy down there, and I'm like going, they're doing it on their hands and knees?
I thought he was touching it up or something.
No,
oh, man.
One guy did it. It took 9 hours per day for 2 days. And then they went in and they did a really good job of patching all the cracks and the little divots and things like that. But somewhere along the wall, it was weird. Somebody must have done some plumbing or something. And it was about, I don't know, about 2 inch wide. There was like a groove along the wall. It was about 2 or 3 inches wide, but, you know, 10 feet long. And it just had this cement groove that dipped down. So it was flush. And then it went down at an angle to about a 2 inch drop. And we basically just had to like level the whole thing. We had to pour cement, level the whole thing. So they went in, they did 2 days of that, cleaned it, prepped it, laid down all the epoxy coat, put the fleck on there. And then today, as we're recording this Friday, they're going to come back in the afternoon and do the top coat.
What color did you do?
So technically it's called Whisper Gray. So it's a gray base, and the fleck in it is a gray, white, and a little bit of black fleck. And
why do you put fleck?
So the fleck does two things. Is one, it does provide a little bit of grip, a little bit of traction, and the other thing is it definitely hides a lot of imperfections and high dirt. I said I just wanted solid color gray, and he brought me like three big tiles with gray, and you just put your foot on, just the dust from your shoe, footprint. You would never be able to keep it clean. You would be constantly just be dusting that thing. Like, I get it. If you're the Peterson Museum and you just got people walking around with a dust machine, you know, just like a big floppy Swiffer all day, you could get away with it, but just in a shop, it was just
you
too
just
much.
Have to have a big industrial iRobot that is constantly mopping the floor. You know, it's just
constantly, like just constantly doing it.
The reason I ask you about the flex, I know it gives the grip. I know it hides. It's the reason I ask is every time I've worked on one of those floors with that, it happens every time I drop something like a screw or a.
Never find it.
I'm going, where in the hell is that? Because
you walk around the magnet.
So what I started to do is putting down, like, I have this big black mat, you know, that you can lay on in the car. I put that down, and hopefully it doesn't roll off the mat. You know what I mean? Because it's like, son of a bitch. You spend 20 minutes looking for one little spring clip or something, you know, that.
It's oftentimes less expensive to do the fleck. And it's not so much about the installation process. It's just that became the norm, that it's just a little bit less expensive for the materials. If you do the finer grit fleck, which oftentimes you would see in a commercial kitchen, but that's a little pricier. And honestly, the solid color is a little bit pricier because you have to even go one or two steps further in the prep to get it as smooth and clean as possible. Honestly, if you're going to do the solid color, my recommendation would be you do it on fresh cement. Do it in a new garage or a new, you know, poured slab, like any type of wear and tear when they've got to fix cracks. Don't even go with the solid. It would be tough to do.
And then do high gloss black, because that will.
Yeah. Well, listen, I was going to say the white you're going to see more, but it turned out pretty good. These guys are doing a good job. There's a lot of sort of debate as to when you can get on it. You know, it's about, you know, an 8 to 12 hours before you can walk on it. And they say 2 days before you can drive on it. But honestly, if it's cool like it is now. Yeah. Give it 3, 4, 5 days before you really drive on it or put heavy stuff on it. I've got to move a few things in there. There's a little bit of furniture and stuff, but even then I think I'm just going to lay down some carpet.
I was going to say,
just cardboard.
Yeah. you don't want is just like the foot of a couch or something. You know, it's not super. You don't want that to like kind of just sit there. And you kind of want to even the load. So a little bit of cardboard or something. But it's looking good. And, you know, we're going to have the cabinets done, but that's going to be a few months. It's a little bit kind of back ordered, but they're all kind of custom done. And
so I thought you were going to do a chrome floor.
Right? It'd be like, you can't see anything. You can't see anything in there. Right?
Yeah, sure. No, it'd be like on a cold day, you'd be like, damn, why'd I do this chrome floor? And on a hot day, you'd be, damn, why'd I do this chrome floor?
Yeah. It's funny. Like every day you'd come home, you have like sunburn on your chin because there's a skylight. Underneath, you know, there's a big skylight there. And you're like, why are your nostrils burnt?
It's like being at Bonneville forever, you know? I wore shorts to work today, damn it, and then my balls are all sunburned, you know?
You got every pigeon in the neighborhood pecking at the floor.
It's because you walk around your shop and you walk around Bonneville with no pants on, Brad. That's why your beanbags burnt.
Speaking of no pants, Doug.
Gray Baskerville at Hot Rod Magazine, he would always come by the hot rod shop and he'd be like going, yep, I was out at Bonneville and you know, every single year I forget to wear underwear.
He's got baggy shorts on.
Freiberger and I talked about that once because it was like, when I told Gray I was coming up to Bonneville, he goes, make sure you wear underwear. Freiberger goes, he told me the same thing, you know? He goes,
oh man.
Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Anyway, so excited about the shop to get in there. And hopefully in a week, we'll kind of be in there officially.
Cool.
Still trying to work out this idea of the mezzanine thing we've talked about a few times. I don't really have a lot of information on that yet, but I'm going to be curious to know when are you starting your mezzanine?
Next week. I'm supposed to have the metal delivered next week. And you should come by and look at it. And we can talk about it off the air. I can tell you a few things.
I am curious. Here's the thing is I got quotes from different companies from $25,000 to $129,000.
Oh, I know. They're expensive.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Kind of different sizes, but that's, again, the variation of what you're talking about. And by the way, on the floors, there are some options, right? You can do polished concrete and you can do a polyurethane, which is even stronger than the epoxy coating. I got quotes anywhere from $6,000 to $25,000.
Yeah.
On floors, even though there's slightly different options, but just straight up one epoxy coating to another, even if you discuss with them the prep and the whole thing, those prices range from $7,000 to $12,000. So definitely do your research, get some quotes, ask them. There are some companies that come in and go, we can knock this thing out in a day. They send three guys over with machines. They grind it down. They lay down the epoxy and then they leave and you're done in a day. I would not necessarily recommend that.
It takes
a little bit more time than that. And, you know, maybe the guy that comes in, he's like, yeah, for $6,000, I knocked this thing out in a day. And then they say, oh, and then you can get on it the next day. Just 12 hours, you're fine. You drive on it, et cetera.
But there's no guarantee. Okay.
That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah.
No warranty.
So I don't know about that. So it was kind of learning about the process and then going toward, you know, picking somebody that I thought was going to be able to do some good work. It also helps when you check in with them two or three times a day and hover around them a little bit and have them go, see what I did here, see what we're grinding here. Because if you don't, it's too easy to just kind of move on and hide some flaws.
That's good. Supervise.
You don't have to be there the whole time and stand over them like a dictator, but you do want to check in a little bit and see what's going on and if they run into issues. It looks pretty good.
You walk around with a set of those machinist magnifiers, like the top of your head, you know, and a real bright light and a level.
Yeah, right.
Just walk around with those and just kind of be checking stuff and let them know that you're serious and thorough.
That's it, like the laser leveler, all that stuff. Kind of doing the thing.
Carry a laser pointer and sit in your lazy boy.
What about this? What about this? Yeah. What about this?
What's that little light? Shine the light on the bump. What's that right there?
Yeah. But it takes a lot of work, especially if you're on your hands and knees with a 10-inch grinder and you're doing 2,000 square feet.
It just takes so much work.
I'm more than excited to let Brad work on his mezzanine and come up with the trials and tribulations of trying to figure out how to do that before I even attack that as a project.
You know, you talk about floors. Years ago when I had the Bond Speed store, and that was 10,000 square feet, and we paid like, oh gosh, I'm going to say it was like $12,000, and it was a brand new building, and all we wanted to do was do a clear epoxy seal over all the surfaces. You know, all they had to do is come in, they use like an acid to clean it, and then they lay it down, and It was awesome. It was great. But the funny side story of that is that our grand opening, we had a huge grand opening, and, you know, Michael came over, and we had Ron Capps was there, all kinds of people. Well, towards the end of the evening, Michael had his Roadster on the center of the showroom floor, and we were in town for a Good Guys. We did it in conjunction with the Scottsdale Good Guys. And, Michael wanted to impress Ron Capps, and as he was pulling out, we pulled a big overhead door, and Michael jumps on his Roadster and like does a burnout across my brand new floors out the door. and we get outside. I go, "Thanks a lot, Mike." He goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "You just burned out on the floors. We just had those done a week ago." And he goes, "Oh shit!" And I said, "He goes, oh, I'm sorry. Felt so bad." I go, "No, come here." So we took him back in, and I had him take a Sharpie and sign it. And then I had Ron Capp sign the other one. And I had the guys come back the next day and clear over the top of it. And it actually made for a really cool thing. Could have been a disaster, but it made.
That was a
much better idea than saying, "Hey, Mikey, try to clean the floors. Yeah. Here's a torch and some Comet and a scrub brush."
Yeah. I think a torch would embed it back in there. It's even more.
That was the same night that I had my El Camino. Him and Caps were in Mike's Roadster, and we drove back over to Scottsdale. And Mike pulled up to the resort we were staying at, and he walked out. He had his camera, his digital camera, and he set it on the grass while we were all talking. And then the next morning, he calls me. He goes, "See my camera?" I'm like,
no.
I haven't seen it, man. You know, I go, "You had it last night." He goes, "Yeah, that's right." He goes, "Oh, crap." We go running down there at like 6 a.m. And not only was his camera sitting there, but the sprinklers had gone off on his black Roadster, on my El Camino, and about three other cars sitting along the curb, and his camera sitting in the wet grass in the middle, and we're like, well, not a good night, you know, not a good night at all.
Oh man. So I know, you know, I always feel bad, like you go to the Quail or you go to any of these card shows, and someone, I shouldn't say the Quail, but I mean, you go to any of these car shows and you know, someone leaves the sprinklers on by accident and the next day everybody's cars are trashed. But like the Quail, you get fog.
Yeah.
So, you know, you always go to the guy, you're like, did you bring a plastic to put over your car? He's like, no, why? And you're like, yeah, you might want to go get some, because you know, you come back the next morning and it looks like it rained all night. It's just, there's so much moisture and you feel so bad. Cause you know, when you're at a concourse, that's next level detailing. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's borderline detail restoration.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a big deal. And man.
And in Arizona, the water is so hard, man. You got to get right away or you've got, you know, water spots.
Mineral etching. Yeah. You know, wow. You've got Matt's floors. Now I kept thinking flake, Matt. I kept thinking, wow, you did flake on your floor, like metallic. You did fleck.
Yeah. Like
the granite looking stuff, not flake. This whole time I was thinking flake. I was like, oh, cool.
I will
going sparkly, huh?
I'll actually
So it looks like those spray cans you get in the craft store, you know, it looks like one of those.
like drunk spatter paint, you know.
Yeah, the fleck paint. We used to do our cabinets with and stuff, color. Right?
Because it's
in the 80s.
I was gonna go with everything.
I remember in the 80s and early 90s, I fleck coated everything. Half my studio was all the cabinets were fleck painted with like neon flashes on them.
They used caution tape and hell yeah.
It was a thing.
Ordering cabinets, you got the floors in.
Yeah.
What'd you figure out about your lift?
I haven't made a decision on the lift yet. I haven't made a decision on the lift yet, simply because I don't know what the mezzanine thing is, if it's going to happen or what size. And that'll kind of determine if I put it by the door. There is room to put it by the door.
Wow, that's cool.
And so I sent you guys a couple images that you'll see. There's a close-up of the swatch, and then you can see this is the gray base coat. And then the next photo is the floor basically done. It's just not shiny yet with a top coat. So you can kind of see how they did it. So the various stages, and I'll post all of this on my social media as well at Motorator. So you guys can see kind of the whole process.
How long do you think it'll be before you get a lift? A while or?
I'm not in a huge rush on the lift. I think it's
nice. It's got a nice shine to it.
What's the scale of that tile? Are those chunks like quarter inch or are they?
Yeah. So fine? That
they look like huge chunks. Those are cool.
They do, but that swatch is probably 3 inches by 3 inches.
Okay. 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 Yeah. I thought it was like 12 by 12. I'm like, wow.
No,
it's like half an inch.
it's a little misleading because when you look at the swatches and you look at the fleck that's in there, when you go through the swatches, you hold it up to your face and you realize all of the fleck looks huge. But when you're standing in there and you realize everything is 5 feet away, 6 feet away, you realize it looks a little different. And it's meant to have almost a terrazzo effect to it. So it actually came out pretty good. I'm curious to see how it is with the top. I just didn't post anything yet because I want to get the top coat done.
Did you paint the walls, Matt?
Before I rented the place, they came in and painted.
Did you put baseboard in, or is that gray along the bottom paint?
The gray baseboard was there. It's just
okay, cool.
Yeah, it's just a rubber trim. And actually, they're coming back to touch up some paint on the white walls. I just wanted to make sure it was pretty clean. In case you want to just do some photos and stuff in there. As far as lift, I'm not exactly sure what the timeline's going to be. It feels like it's, you know, 1 to 3 months. It's months, not weeks, because it's not a super high priority. because I don't necessarily need the lift right away. The stuff I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to be bringing some tools over, bring the Mustang Cobra over and do some work, engine and finish the build on the engine for the Lightning. I don't need a lift for any of that.
Well, the reason I ask is if you need something in the meantime, I have a practically brand new quick lift ramp system.
Those are cool.
They're the big red ones that you drive up, it pivots, and then you put the thing up and it gets the car like 3 feet off the ground. If you've got, you know, anything in the meantime, because I just got that disassembled sitting in the back. I just didn't have a place for it.
Yeah, you know, now that you mentioned it, we have also at Adam's shop, he's got a couple lifts and stuff, but we have a quick jack as well. We have a Ben Pack quick jack. And it's basically like that. It's like a big portable unit. You can almost drag it around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are cool. And you know, you could just hook an airline up to it and that thing works. And that's not a bad solution as well. At least it gets it up high enough. You can change the oil or something. It's really just about like changing brakes and changing oil.
Right.
You know, once you get into more complex stuff, maybe you want to lift, but you can get into, you know, the quick jack thing. The problem with the quick jack, the problem with like quick jack and whatnot is it does sit in the middle of the floor. Right. And if you did a two post lift, you can tuck the arms away. There's nothing in the middle. You can drive through it and it almost not even notice it's there until you need it. That's and again, not really with a four post either, unless you leave the lift up, you know,
right. Yeah.
Otherwise you're driving over it and stuff. But I got to take a few more measurements on the lift. It's like a one thought. It's like, hey, you can fit it in, but you know, in front of the door, but do you have enough room to work on stuff?
Right.
You know, the worst is when you're trying to take a wheel and tire off. And as soon as you get it off, your back hits the wall and you're like, ah, I can't, you know, you're trying to lower the thing and you're like, I'm too old for this shit. I'm gonna hurt my back.
That's why you get a wheel lift dolly.
Or you just take it to Galpin Auto Sports and have them do it.
Exactly. Do the grunt work. So you have to keep us up to date and keep getting us photos so we know how it's coming along, and then I'll let you know on my mezzanine. So guys, before we wrap it up today, I'm thinking about buying a motorcycle.
Yeah, you were saying.
That's cool.
But buy a motorcycle.
Well, I'm wheeling.
Trade.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, that's what I thought.
You might be acquiring a motorcycle.
No, it's there's definitely, you know, a cost involved. But so you guys, the Little John Speedster motorcycles, and you know, my old one that I had is at the Peterson. If it's still there, it was in the Peterson vault for years, and I've seen it when we've gone through the vault a few times, and the white one down there is my old bike. But there's one that's available right now, and it's one of the Little John Speedster bikes, and I'm thinking about getting it. Now, it needs to be tore apart and redone. And that's the reason. There's nothing wrong mechanically or anything with it. It just, it's, you know, it's used and abused. It needs to be redone. And that's why.
That's good. That's a good thing, though.
Like about
it's been used.
It's it's not a museum piece, you know, and excuse me. That's kind of what I like about it, because I can kind of change up the look a little bit and maybe, you know, put my own hand on it. And the guy wanted to deliver it today. I mean, he's like, really? Yeah. You know, I want to, you know. And so I said, no, let's wait a week. I want to think about it a little bit more. But, you know, Aaron, you being a motorcycle guy, what should I be looking for? You know, because I mean, I know I can look at, you know, it's the brakes, the wheels.
Cracks.
What?
Cracks. If it's got miles, look for cracks.
Cracks where,
look
though?
For fatigue. In the frame. I'd be looking at cracks in the frame. You know, anything that's American made is going to leak a little oil. but seriously, I mean, if you're going to refurbish it at all, it's going to be taken down to metal anyway, and you're going to see all
Yeah, but I'm going to redo the whole thing.
I think if it's going to be refurbished, unless you're looking for a 100% bone stock vehicle that's error correct, much like your T-Bird, you want to make sure that it's all there and you'll recognize that. But if you're going to refurbish it, I wouldn't worry about whatever you're looking for, really, because you're going to refurbish it.
It's because the motor, the trans, that can all be rebuilt, the gearbox.
If you're going to keep it and you're looking for a rider, it's a whole different list of things to look for. And again, I would look for cracks in the frame. I'd look for, old repairs. I'd look at to see if they use gasket sealer or real gaskets.
You got to remember, this is like a hot rod of motorcycle. Yeah. So it's not something that's got 100,000 miles on it. It probably doesn't even have, hardly anything, but it's been,
I would say just look for what you recognize as being original that you're not going to have to replace, and then look at the condition of things that you can, repolish rather than re-chrome, or look at what you want to do.
That's one of the things about John's bikes, is he powder coated, and what he didn't powder coat, he anodized, and a lot of the motor parts were hard anodized. So a lot of it's just stripping and redoing and things like that. But
well, that's good, because with powder coating, depending on what they were powder coating to, you might want to look for corrosion under it, especially if it's a machine part that you're going to have to re-machine if it's got corrosion. So look for those bubbles or those mounds, that the unevenness. But other than that, if the wheels are machined, again, the cracks.
And it comes with an extra set of brand new ones, and
perfect. Yeah.
There's a bunch of spares and stuff like that. So
the image I sent you, is that what we're talking about?
That's actually my old bike right there. That's the one that's in Peterson.
I figured that's it was. You said it was white. I just wanted to. Yeah.
Did them in various colors. Some of them had a little cheater seat on the back fender, but that's basically it. Everything about John's bikes, like that rear swing arm mat, when he machined the swing arm, the brake caliper is machined into the swing arm. And if you look at the front,
that's cool.
The bottom of the forks, the caliper is an integral part of the bottom of the forks.
That sounds maintenance free.
it's super simple and clean, and the lines of it are really, really of that era. It's a cool look. I think it's aged well, aside from a little bit of the graphics. You could and the seat design, I mean I think people are more into the flat seats and the L shape these days, but a little bit of restyling and this thing's back on the road and no one's gonna go
I think I'd probably murder it out, all black with a polished stainless exhaust, and it'd look badass, So
bronze wheels or something too. You put a little bit of a, anyway, good.
So we'll see if I acquire it or not. Yeah. So the
very cool. Handlebars are a big one, Brad. Are you going to keep the bars like that? Are you going to put a little more drag style or?
No, those bars are kind of the design, and they're the controls and everything are all
go
built
inside
the bars. All of the wires go through the bars, and I really do like the bars. I'm not going to change them up. So
yeah, cool.
But other than widening it and putting a 12 inch drag slick on the back, and
really, it's not much for cornering.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe I'll add another project to my list. Then I got to get them done. That's Matt. You look like you just swallowed something. Are you okay?
Yeah, I was just looking up stuff. While we're doing it,
he's lost in the rabbit hole of the internet.
All right. So Aaron's got a project we can't discuss yet. Matt has a project that he's trying to put his cars in, and I have another project to move into my shop. So we're all, we're not projectless.
No. Yeah. No, in fact, I do have one that I can discuss. So I officially, on the 31st of January, I will be receiving the donor smart car for the first Isetta. So I will be tearing down that smart car into its basic essentials and stripping out the Isetta and trying to merge the two, marry the two.
More Setta?
Yeah, it's going to be a smart Setta. So I'm really looking forward to that. My
Matt, any news you can discuss, Matt? About
you're going to do that. You're going to do that Hayabusa engine, though, right?
I don't think so. I have to get a hold of Dave Amkin because I am going to have the backup of but I really don't want to do the Busa motor.
Then definitely put a little tiny turbo on whatever you're going to do.
Well,
a little extractor pipe sticking out the back.
I think Roskopf's going to want that thing as fast as it can go, but I'm going to say, dude, no. No, especially if you're going to drive it, man. That's why I don't build cars for other people, because no matter how good you build them, there's still the liability of shit happens.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be a headline because someone got, you know, drove it too
yeah,
hard.
like last year.
You notice people don't drive Isettas. They just put them next to their pool table in their collection or next to the jacuzzi or the bar. Yeah, there's a reason for that. Don't make them faster.
Well, and it's because it's the other people on the road that run into you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, you got anything you want to talk about or you want to save that?
We're going to save it. We're let's wrap it up. I've got to head out.
Yeah, but I wanted to tell everybody that your TRX show. Okay, never mind.
Oh, although you did mention TRX, and our buddy Goldberg just took delivery of his Ram TRX.
TRX. I thought you meant like the rubber bands that you work out with.
It's funny. And he's like, this thing is fantastic, and I can't wait to get one as a press car to drive a little bit. He absolutely loves it, and already it's being sent out to be modified. It's 700 and something horsepower, 710, 711.
Yeah, it's right around 700. Yep.
His friends at Gearhead Fabrication that work on his other engines, they're gonna not super drastic, not like engine swap, but they're gonna do a tune and a pulley swap and a few things, and it's gonna be like 900.
Yeah, because he wants to get a little more air.
First of all, 700 is not enough. Second of all, though, it's amazing that a pulley swap and some tuning can get you 200 horsepower.
Yeah. Also, yeah. In Texas, they've got 93 octane, right? We don't, not the shit we got out here. So, and that makes a difference when you're just trying to get as much horsepower as possible. There is a difference between a 91 octane tune and a 93 octane.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So they've got that going on, but right now he's getting prepped for getting in the ring. He's got to do Royal Rumble in 10 days.
Really?
Or 10 days as we record this. Yeah, January 31st in Florida. He's got to wrestle again.
I was going to say, that was supposed to be out here, wasn't it? And then they canceled it and moved it to Florida?
It's going to be – it's not at the WWE training where, you know, their place in Tampa. It's at, you know, like a stadium. I don't know exactly sure.
Yeah, I heard on the news that –
a big event.
Once we out here, they have to move it because California won't let anything happen.
Like, they don't give you a lot of heads up for that kind of stuff, by the way, too. Like, they call, like, a couple days after New Year's, they called him on a Saturday and they said, hey, you got to do Monday Night Raw on Monday. And he's like, you know, it's the holidays. I haven't been in the gym in a month and a half. They're like, whatever, come out here Monday. And then they go, and when he gets there on Monday, they go, yeah, go out there and you're going to, this is kind of the pitch. This is the storyline. And also you got to wrestle in 30 days. Wow. And that's kind of the thing, is like, you know, with his type of contract, you're basically on retainer, and it just the way it goes. And, you know, admittedly well compensated. So it is what it is, but you know, he always wants to put on a good show and he wants to be able to, you know, look good when he gets out there. And
Matt, we've talked about this. That is why the three of us always stay ripped.
That's right. Yeah. You never know when you're going to get that call.
Yeah. You got to keep the guns going, man. You got to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But let's get into more stuff next week. I've got the Jaguar F-Type R, the new facelifted version, just delivered out front. So it's yellow. And you know how I feel about yellow cars. But I am excited. a Jaguar F-Type R.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Wow.
So
those are cool.
Yeah. It's going to be a nice little sports car. Perfect for moving stuff, like into a new shop.
Absolutely. You didn't, I'm surprised you didn't call up and go, hey, you got a Dodge, you know, Ram, like big cargo van or one of those.
You got a van.
Vans that I can drive for the next.
Well, I did move a bunch of stuff this week in the Volvo XC60 Recharge. It's the plug-in hybrid SUV.
Oh.
And you'd be surprised. It's the midsize SUV, and you can jam a lot of stuff in that little thing.
Well, you know? I saw that you had everything tied to the top and down the sides. And
yeah, I didn't put anything in the vehicle. I just stacked it onto the roof.
Yeah.
It sounds like my Jeep Grand Cherokee that I stuffed an 800-pound lathe in last week.
You brought a lathe home in your Jeep?
And I stuffed it all in the Jeep and drove it home with the door open. like 2.5 hour drive up the hill. It was only noisy when I changed, when I like it would downshift and, you know.
Yeah, right.
You get that.
All right, guys. Thank you.
We'll see you next time. And as always, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. And Matt, where can they find us online?
Check us out at shiftandsteer.com. Our social media is Shift Steer Media. I think on Facebook, we're Shift and Steer. And, you know, follow me at Motorator. I'll post some Matt Cave pictures and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. Nice. Check me out at Bradley_Fanshaw on Instagram. And Aaron, where might we find you?
I'm Aaron Hagar in most places and The Rat Runner's Garage on the interweb on the website. Thanks for listening, everyone.
If you like this show, we're out of here. To Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.